Hi everyone, my name's Karen. I'd like to thank you for joining me today. What I was hoping to do was record a series of audio classes on a few different topics. Something that I hope will be helpful for members who are new to the ES Foundation site. And I've picked a range of topics, particularly things that I found difficult or that I struggled with or had to learn the hard way. And today I'd like to talk about boundaries. It's a bit of a buzzword in some ways, and it does get thrown around a lot. But when I was trying to think about the topic, I was looking back over my life and my childhood and trying to come up with examples of when boundaries were ever discussed, or when I was shown or taught that we should have boundaries and it was okay. And I honestly could not really think of anything. The only thing that came to mind, and I'm sort of joking when I say this, and I'm sort of not, is as a teenager watching the movie Dirty Dancing. Now, anyone who's my generation has probably seen this movie. There's a scene where Patrick Swayze's character is trying to teach Jennifer Grey's character how to hold her dance frame. And he says to her, "This is my dance space, this is your dance space. I don't go into yours, you don't go into mine." Growing up, that scene always stuck with me for some reason, just the image of that personal space bubble. And whenever I heard the word boundaries, that's what I would visualize. But aside from that, I had nothing. And I have to say that I got pretty far into my adult life before the topic of boundaries ever made an appearance again. Over the years, I'd actually studied quite a few different healing modalities, and regardless of what I studied, the topics of ethics and boundaries never really was discussed. So it was interesting to me that my boundaries education started in the area of horses. I've had horses growing up, I've had horses for most of my adult life. Anyone who's familiar with horses would know that the training of horses and the treatment of horses tends to be very traditional. So there's a lot of things that are done because that's the way it's always been done. It's quite archaic in a lot of ways, in that sense. It's not until, say, the last 20 or 30 years that people have been looking into natural horsemanship and really trying to find different ways that are more beneficial for the horse. For me, I was always on the lookout for something that was better for my horses. It was probably around 2010 that I found a very different trainer, someone who was doing things very differently to the norm. And her name was Carolyn Resnick. She talked a lot about boundaries and respect when it came to horses, as in them respecting you and you respecting them. And her methods were very, very interesting to me at the time. Again, it was my introduction to boundaries because I knew with my own horses I had that issue. And it was nothing particularly serious, but they might get a little bit pushy or invade my space, or if it was something that they didn't want to do, they'd be a little bit uncooperative. And again, horses are herd animals, the hierarchy is very important to them, and so are boundaries. They have no trouble enforcing their boundaries if they feel it's necessary. If one horse wants to move another horse out of its space, it's quite usual for that horse to savagely bite or kick to get them moving. It's done instantly, it's often done aggressively, and after the fact, there's no hard feelings and they just go on as before. That does transfer to their humans as well. So with my horses, they all really liked me, but at that time, I can say they probably didn't really respect me that much because I was more concerned with them liking me and me being their friend and wanting to do what they wanted to do. And I really wasn't that good at enforcing, rules or boundaries. It was very obvious to me at the time that that was one of my issues with my horses, but I just really didn't know how to handle it. And to be honest, I didn't want to upset them or make them mad or sacrifice the friendship that we had. And in my mind, enforcing those boundaries would cause all that to happen. I also really didn't know how to implement these boundaries in a way that I thought was compassionate for the horse. I thought if I had to be tough on them, that you could only really do it in a cruel or heartless way. Now, I won't go into all the training methods, but there is one that I'd like to mention. Not because I think you all want to be horse trainers, but because I think it's somewhat relevant to when we're around people as well. Carolyn calls this one sharing territory. Basically, what you do is you get a chair You sit out in the horse's paddock and you wait for them to come to you. So they don't have any tack on them, they don't have halters, you're not trying to control them in any way, but you sit there and you wait for them to come to you. Now, most horses are very curious, so it won't take long for them to come over and go, "What are you doing?" And when they come over, they might start sniffing you or licking you or nuzzling you. Eventually, their curiosity gets a little pushy, and your job is to sit there and not do anything. So you don't want to be patting them, you don't want to be invading their space, but you sit there and you just feel into the energy. As long as they're polite, you let them do whatever they want to do. It's your job to actually monitor the situation and feel, what does this feel like? Is this okay? Am I happy with this? Is my horse being polite? Is this how I want my horse to behave? Once that starts to change, and it will change because the horses will get a little bit more full on and maybe want to nip you or rub on you. And most of the time it's in a very good natured way, but that's just what they do. So once you feel that energy start to change and you feel that it's just a little bit more invasive, you ask them to step back or you shoo them away a little bit. You just ask them to respect your space. It won't take long again, probably before they're trying to push back into you, but you do it again. Your job is to monitor what does that energy feel like, and when you feel it change, you need to do something about it. When we apply this to humans, it sort of makes a little bit more sense. I think Lisa likes to call it the check engine light. You might be doing something, you might be in a certain situation, and the check engine light in your body comes on, and you're like, "What is that?" And at first, it's hard to really understand what your body is trying to tell you. It does get easier over time because, unfortunately, we didn't get an instruction manual with our wonderful bodies, but we can write our own. If you pay attention over time, it makes more sense. Your engine light goes on, and you're like, okay, what am I feeling? What does this mean? I think that's really useful when it comes to people and the situations around you. If that engine light comes on, you're like, okay, do I need to do something here? Do I need to maintain my boundaries? Do I need to make a change? Now, I wouldn't necessarily suggest you shoo a person away like you would a horse, but then again, these days you never know. Learning from Carolyn, her techniques and her wisdom on these sort of topics was just really, really intriguing and really interesting to me. And of course, once I started using them with my horses, there was instant improvement. And not only that, my horses were so ridiculously happy. And I just look back and it's just so obvious to me that that's what they were looking for. It really made all the difference to them. And that experience really hit home with me, at least with my horses. I hadn't quite made the connection with people. That wouldn't happen until I found a yes. But with horses, I realized finally, after many, many years, how important that respect and those level of boundaries can be. A few years later, when I found a yes and I started reading the material, I was particularly drawn to these type of topics, the ones about boundaries and ethics and integrity. Of course, life puts you smack bang in the middle of situations where you can learn these things firsthand. And I did go through a lot of real life experiences so I could really get that message. And if I didn't get it the first time, I'd get another chance and another chance until it finally started to sink in. The more I learned about boundaries, the more I realized that outside of Lisa and ES, there really weren't a lot of other people talking about these kinds of things. And when I looked around in my 3D world, it was pretty clear that not many people had any idea of what boundaries were or even how to implement them. That's why I thought this might be a good topic to discuss. I even did a little Googling to find a good definition for personal boundaries, and I did find one on Wiki. Their definition is: personal boundaries are guidelines, rules, or limits that a person creates to identify reasonable, safe, and permissible ways for other people to behave towards them and how they will respond when someone passes those limits. I think that's a really good place to start, but for those of us on the ascension path, it's probably a little more complicated than that. So what I would like to include in this discussion is why we need boundaries, how to tell if your boundaries are being breached, what we can do about it, and also learning how to respect other people's boundaries.
Okay, so let's talk about why we need boundaries. I think one of the main reasons would have to be energy conservation. As star seeds and indigos and empaths, we're quite often wired to help. You know, we want to be the nice person and the helpful person and the people pleasing. There's obviously a lot of social conditioning around that as well. But for a lot of us, it never really occurred that we could actually say no to anybody. It's always about putting other people's needs first. The problem with that is it gets to be extremely draining. So we really can't afford to have everything around us, you know, family and friends and workplaces and environments. We just can't afford to let that drain our energy completely. It also comes down to self-esteem. So when there's low self-esteem involved, again, it goes back to thinking that we're not really worth it. You know, we're not able to say no, and everyone else's needs are more important. I think we all have our own weaknesses and in that particular area. I know for myself, I probably find it harder to maintain boundaries when it comes to men as compared to women. I was thinking back about a relationship that I had in my 20s, and looking back over the patterns in that relationship, I realized I don't think I ever said no to him ever. What's worse than that is I never even wanted to. When I look at that now, I'm like, that's crazy. But at the time, that's just where I was coming from. And his needs were always more important than mine. And why would I not want to help him and be there for him? So I think we need to look at our own weaknesses and patterns in regards to that. Some areas you might be better at keeping your boundaries, and other areas you might really need to work on. And once you start to build your self-esteem, it becomes a lot easier to say no to people and not feel selfish or guilty or like you're letting them down. Another important reason to have boundaries is for your own protection. Boundaries are really one of your first lines of defense and can help keep you safe, both on a physical level and also on an energetic level. From an energetic point of view, if you don't have boundaries, you pretty much become a free meal for any humans or non-humans around you. I'm sure everyone's had that experience when you've been around somebody and you start feeling tired or sick or confused, but at the same time, that person feels happy and they seem really energized. That's because they are draining your energy. When they do that, they can often leave behind energetic siphons or implants or cording, and then that way their free meal never ends. Just to be clear though, in most instances, this is not a conscious or deliberate or evil action on their behalf. So it's important not to judge or blame them, but we can be aware of it. Then once we're aware of it, we can take action to protect ourselves. Also, without boundaries, you can become a really easy target for bullies and tyrants and even parasites. In terms of healing sessions, if you're a healer and you're working with clients, if you don't have your boundaries in place, that could cause a lot of issues. You could take on a lot of their stuff. You can get sick. It can cause you a lot of problems and potentially a lot of drama. Now, if you're in a situation where you do have to implement your boundaries and say, for example, you have to say no to somebody or you can't do what they want you to do, I think it's really interesting to pay attention to how they react. Do they get angry? Do they get upset? Do they give you the silent treatment? Or are they okay and do they understand where you're coming from? Because how a person responds to not getting what they want can be a really good indicator of what's going on with them. One example that I've experienced with this relates to texting. Now, I really do have a love-hate relationship with texting. In this particular instance, I was going through one of those periods where I was just exhausted and I felt stressed all the time. So I was trying to minimize my contact with people. And I'd explain that to this particular friend. You know, I said, if I don't reply, please don't take it personally. It's just that I'm going through a few things and I'm trying to isolate myself and conserve my energy. She seemed okay with it. She said she understood. She was smiling. But I noticed that the message really didn't get through. She would constantly text me. And to me, if I've texted somebody once or twice and they haven't responded, then I'd just let them be. And you just go, oh, well, I don't know what's going on there. But my friend, regardless of whether I replied or not, would keep texting to the point where she was sending me multiple texts a day and I hadn't responded to any of them. And the next time I saw her in person, she would always ask, did you get my text? Of course, initially that just put a lot of pressure on me and it made me feel like I needed to apologise and make excuses for why I didn't apply. I really did start to feel uncomfortable with the situation, and to be honest, I felt a little harassed, but I also felt like a jerk for not responding because I still had that conditioning where you want to be polite, and if someone is reaching out to you, then you answer them back. But when I took the time to really feel into the situation, it was very clear to me that she was not respecting my boundaries. And it was just one of those times where I had to really focus on staying neutral and not being triggered, and also stick to my guns and really try to limit the texting interactions. That's definitely one of the downsides when it comes to technology and social media. When people expect constant and instant contact with you at all times. And if you ever want to take some time out, sometimes it can make people feel like you're rejecting them. Okay, so now I'd like to move on to how to tell if your boundaries are being breached. I found a good example of this on YouTube. This hit the news a little while ago, and it involves Jerry Seinfeld and a singer called Kesha. It's a really good example of breaching boundaries. What actually happened is Jerry Seinfeld was on the red carpet. He was in the middle of doing an interview. And Kesha ran up to him. She interrupted the interview and said, "Hi, I'm Kesha. I love you. Can I give you a hug?" And he's poor Jerry. And he just puts his hand up and goes, "No, thanks." And she said, "Please." And he's, "No, thanks." And then again, she tries again, moving in on him and says, "A little one." And he's like, "No, thanks." And he takes a step back. And then she storms off in an embarrassed huff. Turns out Jerry has no idea who she was. So to him, it's just somebody trying to interrupt his interview and hug him. And apparently he's not a fan of hugging strangers in the first place. He actually said in an interview after the fact that he didn't know who she was, and it just felt a little off to him that she would do that. To me, I thought it was really well done the way he politely maintained his boundaries, especially under all the pressure of being on camera and in the middle of an interview. It's funny though, a lot of reactions, they were very embarrassed and mortified for her and thought he just should have gone along with it not to embarrass her. But here I am thinking, way to go, Jerry, for not caving in, especially in that kind of situation, especially in Hollywood. It would have been very easy just to go along with it and hug somebody that you really don't want to in those circumstances. So for Jerry, he knew his boundaries were being breached because it felt a little off to him. That would be the equivalent of his check engine light going on that I spoke about earlier. It's probably a little different for everybody, but there are certainly feelings that show up when somebody's trying to get a little pushy with you, whether that be on a physical, emotional, or energetic level. Of course, sometimes it's really obvious when someone's breaching your boundaries because they might be yelling or screaming at you or throwing things or having a bit of a tantrum. But in a lot of cases, it can be a bit more subtle, especially when there are family dynamics involved or people that you've known a long time or you're friends with. It really can be a bit more subtle, and there can be many layers of manipulation involved as well. And that's when you're going to have to pay attention to your feelings. So for me, some of the feelings are that, you know, I might feel uncomfortable. I feel dread. I feel anxious. I might feel a bit sick in the stomach, or like I really, really want to escape the situation. There really are a range of emotions that could turn up. So whether you're feeling angry or fearful, whatever it is, pay attention to it and try and figure out why you're feeling this way. And sometimes you can't do that in the moment. It might be something that you need to do after the fact or in hindsight, and you can sort of reverse engineer what happened and how to prevent it from happening again. I remember with one particular friendship that I had, it took me quite a long time to realize that there was a problem. Initially, the only telltale sign was before I would see her in person, I would eat a lot of food. I would literally go on a little food binge and stuff myself full of food so I was numb. It took me so many times before I realized something was up. Probably the first 100 times, I didn't even know why I was doing it. And then I started thinking, why am I eating these packet of biscuits when I don't really want them? Suddenly I realized, oh, I do this every time before I visit with this person. My body was picking up on the energetic attack, which was causing subconscious levels of anxiety, which I was trying to block with food.
after I spent quite a while reflecting on that, I started to make the connections, and it was to do with boundaries, particularly energetic boundaries that were being breached at the time. Unfortunately, eventually, I had to end that friendship. And in this case, it was my addictive behaviors towards food that was the strong indicator. So it's probably a good idea if you do have addictive behaviors, and if you find yourself constantly revisiting them in certain situations, I would definitely take that as a red flag and really try to figure out why this is showing up. Another thing to consider is, when do people turn up in your life? There are going to be times when you become what I like to jokingly call energetically popular. It's just one of those things when you start working on yourself and you do the clearing work and your frequency starts to rise, people and energies and entities notice, and they might decide that they want a piece of that. So suddenly, and quite often out of the blue, you're going to have people reach out to you and try to gain access to you. More than likely, this is going to happen when it's very inconvenient for you. If you're going through times that are very stressful, or you're very busy, or you've got a lot of work to do, this is usually when these people show up. Particularly look for people who perhaps have quite a few troubles of their own, or maybe they've got addiction problems. These people can very easily be pulsed by their attachments or entities around them to make contact with you and try and cause a bit of chaos. Now, when this first started happening to me, I didn't really want to believe it. I had a bit of resistance to the idea and tried to tell myself, oh, it's just a coincidence that I hadn't heard from that person for many, many months, and they just happened to text me with an urgent request during the midst of a drama of my own. It was really only a couple of people that were doing it, but like clockwork, they would turn up during moments when I was least able to deal with them. So when this happens to you, and it will, you need to decide if this behavior is acceptable for you, and do you have the time and energy to deal with it right now? And if you don't, that's okay. For example, one of the friends that would always do this to me, I would barely hear from them during the rest of the year, but during one of my moments, they would usually text me after they'd been drinking. It made it very difficult because, when they were sober, they're very kind-hearted and fairly reasonable sort of person. But when they'd been drinking, they wanted instant attention. It did get to the point where I had to say to them, look, I'm really sorry, but I'm not going to respond to you when you've been drinking. I knew this was the right thing to do, but it was still tough. Again, it goes back to wanting to help people and not wanting to let them down. So it did take a lot of willpower for me to not respond. It didn't completely solve the problem because my friend, when they'd been drinking, they would conveniently forget this conversation, and then maybe they'd try another text or two. And when I would address the issue when they were sober, they would remember. They would think that's completely reasonable request of mine and they would understand, but every now and then it would still pop up. At least I communicated my boundaries clearly to them. They know where I stand. I don't have to feel guilty about not responding. Now, I've noticed when you're going through an energetically popular stage, these kind of visitors and unexpected contacts can also happen on particular dates. These can be dates that are significant for you personally, or they can also be dates that are significant for other reasons. One that comes to mind is September 11th. Now, this date is a crucial date for the negative alien agenda, and for those of us that are sensitive, it can be a very difficult day. Most years, if I'm able to, I like to go into an energetic lockdown, which means I stay home, I focus on my 12D shield. I focus on keeping my personal hub secure, and I try to limit all external contact. I remember one particular year, though, it was pretty tough going. At about lunchtime, I heard from a friend who just decided on the spur of the moment that she wanted to pop in for a visit, which, for anyone that knows me, isn't really my style. I'm not much of a pop-in visitor kind of person. So it was pretty funny to me that she'd chosen that day of all days to want to visit, particularly when she'd only really visited me a handful of times over all the years that I'd known her. So when it happened, I just checked in with myself and, is this something I need to do today? It was a very clear no. I had to say to her, I'm really sorry, but today's not a good day for visiting. At this point, I just wanted to mention again about being aware of your weaknesses. There are going to be people or topics or certain situations that you find yourself in that really are a trigger to you. And if you know what they are, it's going to be much easier for you to not take the bait. And I really do mean the word bait. If you can imagine like a big energetic hook with the most appealing, delicious bait that's created just for you, that's what they throw out to try and get you to engage. Of course, there's always going to be situations that you can't avoid. For example, workplaces tend to be one of those environments that can be very difficult to navigate. There are going to be all sorts of personalities and archetypes that are doing their best to derail you. It can be quite a challenge to keep your boundaries. Usually, the best course of action is to not engage unless you really have to. You should always be kind and courteous, but it's okay if you try and cut out any unnecessary interactions. Narcissists, for example, are very good at trying to lure you in, latching onto you, and making it all about themselves. This has happened to me on many occasions, and at first I didn't really pick that they were narcissists. You know, you try and give people the benefit of the doubt. It took me a little while to go, okay, I see it. I see it. I need to do something about this. What do I do? I tried a few different tactics, but as I mentioned, the less engaged you are, the easier it gets. For me, I kept it to hellos, goodbyes, any work-related interaction, that's fine. There's nothing you can do about that. But when it came to personal topics or they started to try and veer the conversation about themselves, I would try and keep out of it. Of course, I wasn't always successful, and this was one of my weak spots that popped up. You know, they would try and lure me in with talks about horses or animals or things that they knew I had a strong interest in. They may even resort to flattering you and pretending they want your opinion or help on something, and that's just another form of bait. Now, I've taken plenty of baits in my lifetime, but the one that really sticks with me happened at work. It was with a particular person. I had identified that they were a narcissist, and I was doing my best to not engage for the most part. But there was one particular day where they lured me in with the horse talk, and I thought, it'll be fine. Before I knew it, I was completely trapped in a conversation that they twisted to make it all about themselves. And I was hearing their deepest, darkest, most intimate secrets about their issues and their childhood and their family. And it felt like there was no escape. When I tried to deconstruct later what happened and how did I get there, I had this visual to help me put it into context. To me, it felt like I was walking down a road and this person said, "Hey, why don't you walk down this road with me?" And I looked down there and I'm like, "Yeah, it looks okay. I think I'll be fine. I feel safe." We start down the journey and we're taking our steps and it's all going well. But then before I know it, they grab me, they throw my back up against the wall and they're in my face and I am trapped and can't get away. This is what it feels like when you're in a conversation with a narcissist and they take you by surprise. So next time it's probably better when they say, "Hey, why don't you come down this road?" Go, "No thanks, I'm good." Of course, this can be easier said than done when it comes to family. If we have these certain triggers or buttons, as I like to call them, in a lot of cases, your family installed those buttons, so they certainly know how to press them. This can involve a lot of emotional manipulation or blame or guilt or a whole spectrum of things that they can do to you to make you comply with what they want. When family behave this way, it's perfectly natural that this is going to bring up certain emotions in you, but don't let that be a reason for you to go along with something that you know is not in your best interest. Also, family members can be behaving from a place of good intentions, but it can often end up being the same result if they're trying to control you because they think they know what's best for you. I have actually had this kind of experience with my father. Now, I won't go into the whole story, but for a number of reasons, I chose not to have contact with him once I became an adult. So for many, many years, I didn't see him or have any interaction with him until one day fairly recently, he tracked me down and turned up at my front door. He was very happy and excited to see me. He had his girlfriend with him. They'd been together for a number of years, and it turned out they actually lived in another state, so quite a distance away from me. After all this went down, and given the distance between where we lived, I did have a little bit of concern. Well, what happens now? You know, I was a little bit worried that he might want to move a bit closer to me and spend more time with me. But I also had that thought, oh, it'll be fine. As long as he stays with his girlfriend, it'll be fine. Guess what happened? Within 10 days, he'd left his girlfriend and called me from the road because he was driving down to my state to find a place to live. And if I wanted to, he would be happy to move to my town and live near me. I knew in my heart that this is something that I did not want at this time. I also knew that I probably only had one shot to get this conversation right. I really didn't want to hurt his feelings or make him feel unwelcome, but I also knew I had to stand firm with my boundaries because if I gave an inch, I had a feeling he would take a mile. So I tried to state my case as calmly and as kindly as possible and told him that I didn't think that that would be a good idea, that I felt it would put way too much pressure on both of us, and it's not something that I wanted. During this conversation, I did have to communicate this in a couple of different ways before it really sunk in for him. But to his credit, he did listen. He did seem to take it as well as he could, and he went back home. I was very relieved that this went as well as it did, all things considered. But yet again, I still had those feelings, even though I knew in my heart 100% this is what I had to do. I still had those feelings of, oh my God, am I the worst daughter in the world? As I mentioned before, I think it's quite normal for these kind of feelings to pop up, but you also have that sense of peace when you follow your heart, and that really helps you do what you need to do, no matter how tough it is. Now, this next area is going to be a difficult one to talk about without sounding completely ungrateful, but I do want to mention it just in case it comes up for any of you. It's related to gifts and people giving you items that you may or may not want. I'm going to preface this by saying, of course, in a lot of times, people are genuinely giving you something out of love and respect and friendship, and that feels good to you, and it's a lovely gesture. I'm not really talking about those scenarios. I'm talking about situations that have a bit more of a negative spin to them. Again, I'm going to file this in the category of things I really didn't understand straight away. I did spend a lot of time going, is this really happening or is this just my imagination? Now, in my experience, this tended to fall into two different categories. The first one involves people who try and buy your attention. They may be people that you've had to increase your boundaries with in the past, or they may be people who genuinely want to be your friend, or perhaps feel that they owe you in some way. We're looking for awareness, not blame, but it's always handy to understand the motivations of people. The second category tends to have a bit more of a sinister feel to it, perhaps coming from people you'd prefer not to have interactions with or you have a strained relationship with, and they tend to want to give you things as a way of almost like an ownership. I call it the reverse siphon. So even though they're the ones giving you something, you're the one that gets energetically siphoned from that action. If we take into consideration that absolutely everything has an energy signature, then it pays to be discerning about what you allow into your home and into your field. If people are either constantly giving you items as a way to maybe gain access to you, they might feel entitled, like, here, I've given you this, so now you owe me. Or perhaps somebody gives you a big fancy gift and they're trying to win your affection or win you over in some way as a form of manipulation. Sometimes it's just this weird out of the blue gift that really has no relevance to you and something that you would never ever want. There really are a million different ways that this could present itself, but I just wanted to reiterate, yes, this is a thing. I went through a period of time where nearly every week someone was trying to give me something, and some of these gifts had some pretty big strings attached. I'm a minimalist at heart, so I'm not really looking for more stuff. And I didn't know what to do with it, and I didn't really know how to handle the situations. I tried just about everything. I tried politely declining. I tried gracefully accepting. I tried giving a blanket rule that I don't accept gifts. I tried everything I could think of, and to be honest, nothing felt great. So I think if this does happen to you, just take it on a case-by-case basis, feel into what is the best course of action for you. Okay, so now I'd like to go into a bit more detail on things we can do if we find we're in a situation where our boundaries have been breached. First and foremost, it starts with us. We need to take responsibility for our thoughts, for our emotions, for our triggers, and also our actions. There are a lot of tools that can be found in the Foundation site to really help you with these areas. Things like the 12D shield, commanding your space, boundary testing, working on clearing fear and ego, as well as really trying to improve your self-esteem, are all things that are going to help with boundaries. Once we've been using the Foundation tools for a while, it does get to the point where we start to know better. And once we start to know better, we really need to do better. And no, it's not always fair that we're always the ones that need to do better, but it's just the way it is. Now, for example, if I'm in a situation with a bully or a tyrant or someone that's being aggressive with me, I really try and stay as neutral as I can. I try not to get triggered and I try not to be offended. These are all things that are easier said than done, but the more you practice these, the easier it does get. In these situations, I also really try and focus on compassion and compassion for that person, because I find when you can see a bully's pain and you can see their trauma and you can see that their actions are all stemming from that, it becomes a lot easier to not take what they're saying personally and to see it for what it really is. Other things to remember is to try and stay calm. You want to be assertive but not aggressive. So you certainly don't want to try and match their energy levels or their anger in any way. I also think that less is more in these kinds of conversations. You should certainly say your piece, but don't feel that you need to get stuck in a loop where you're constantly justifying your actions or apologizing. I saw a really good saying related to this, and it was, "No is a complete sentence." And while we may not always want to take that literally, it's just a good reminder that if you do need to say no, please don't also feel like you need to make excuses or justify your decisions. Now, depending on the situation, you might not always have the opportunity or the presence of mind to do this, but if you do, it can be helpful to reinforce your 12D shield whilst you're in the middle of that conversation. It just may give you the chance to center yourself and perhaps get a little guidance on the best way to handle it. Of course, if it ever gets to the point where the situation is volatile or the person is threatening you or yelling abuse at you, the best course of action may be to leave. But what happens if you've been in the middle of it and everything you've hoped to do has gone out the window and it hasn't gone very well? I think the most important thing to do is not beat yourself up about it. It's very easy after the fact to mentally start to loop about what you should have said and what you should have done, and it's all your fault and it's all their fault. And it's very easy to fall into that trap. So if you can, just try and put all that aside, honestly assess the situation, look for your strengths, look for your weaknesses, look to see if you have any blind spots, and look to see what you can learn from this. Because nothing is ever wasted if you can learn from it. Also bear in mind that sometimes things can be amplified to get our attention. I've had instances where everything just feels completely over the top and the level of attack and the level of negative feelings are not proportionate to what the situation is. Sometimes it's because these are learning opportunities. And our teams really want us to see it and they really want us to get it. So they turn up the dial, really magnify it until we see it and we understand what the lesson is. In my experience, once I've seen it, once I go, oh, that's it, then it all kind of dissipates and goes back to normal. So if that does happen to you, just go through your checklist. You know, is it anything I'm doing? Is it a blind spot? Am I doing anything dodgy? And if it's none of those things and you honestly can't figure it out, just sort of sit with it, be patient, and consider that it might be a learning opportunity for you. Now, be warned that some of these learning opportunities can turn up in the strangest places. I remember one that was particularly amplified for me happened at work, and it was in relation to signing birthday cards. Like a lot of workplaces, we had that tradition where if it was somebody's birthday, the company would buy a card and send it around so people could sign it and wish them happy birthday. Now, it was a fairly large company, so that meant there were a lot of cards going around, and usually every week there'd be something to sign. Back in the day when we first started doing this, it was really a fun thing to do. You'd make it personal, you'd try and come up with something funny to write on the card, and it really meant a lot to you when you got a card written by people that you knew well and that took the time to write something special. But I noticed over time, it sort of became a bit more generic. People just tended to write the same old thing, and there just seemed to be a real lack of thought or sincerity going into them. Like a dutiful coworker, I continued to sign them, but I did notice that every time one would be given to me, I'd start to get that feeling of dread and resistance, and like I really didn't want to sign another card. At first, I did what I usually did, and that was ignore those feelings. After a little bit more time, I just tried to justify them. Like, oh, you're just being lazy, or you're just being a bit of a birthday Scrooge. Just ignore it, keep signing them, do what everyone else is doing. But unfortunately, the dread increased, and it got to the point where I could no longer ignore it. As they say, it was not my first rodeo when it came to dread, so I knew deep down that something was going to have to change, and there was a chance that I'd have to stop signing these cards. Now, well, on the one hand, I had that thought, oh, it's no big deal, I can stop anytime I want. On the other hand, I felt an enormous amount of apprehension, and I didn't really know why. So after one last-ditch effort prayer of, please God, don't make me stop signing these cards, I made a change. At first, I tried to be a little bit sneaky about it, so I didn't outright tell people that I wasn't going to sign them. If somebody just left the card on my desk, I would just pass it on to the next desk without really saying anything. And I wondered why I felt the need to be sneaky like that and why I just couldn't come out and say, I'm sorry, I'm not doing this anymore. It really was an example to me of that amplification that I was talking about earlier, where a situation that seems quite trivial and really should be no big deal was extremely difficult to get through. I have to say my instincts were warning me because that level of apprehension that I was feeling kind of matched the reaction of my coworkers when I did finally say that I decided to not sign birthday cards and that I'd prefer when it was somebody's birthday that I'd go up to them in person and sincerely wish them a happy birthday. Let's just say the backlash was very surprising. It was such a strange reaction. I had about 60% of my coworkers thinking I was the worst person in the world, and about 40% would come up to me and say, oh, you're so lucky, I wish I didn't have to sign these cards. When I'd point out to them, well, you don't, you can stop if you like, they would always go, oh no, I couldn't do that. So it was interesting to me the level of peer pressure that we all felt in regards to just this simple action of signing a birthday card. It was also interesting to me how upset this made some people when I decided to not go along with it. There were a lot of comments thrown around about how uncaring and how cold-hearted I was, and it was all said in a joking kind of way because that's what we do in Australia, but underneath it there were definitely some people who genuinely felt that way. There was one guy that I worked with and he was a very nice person. But for about a year afterwards, he would still put the cards on my desk, even though he knew that I wasn't signing them. He only stopped because one day I couldn't really help myself and I joked back and I said to him, you know, I don't sign these cards. It just seems a little passive aggressive that you're always putting them on my desk. And he just kind of laughed and looked a bit sheepish. After that, he stopped doing it. So even though my coworkers weren't thrilled with my decision, there was no denying the relief I felt when I stopped signing them. It was night and day as far as feelings go. Even though I didn't completely understand the reasons for why I needed to do that, I had to trust the feelings behind it. Looking back on that situation now, I can see there are some issues related to my consent and my signature. But I can also say it was a really good lesson in peer pressure and going against the grain and realizing that sometimes people are not going to be happy with your decisions or the boundaries that you keep, and that really is okay. Now, I know a lot of the examples that I've spoken about may sound a little trivial, But the way I like to look at it is every action that we do matters. The small stuff, the medium stuff, the big stuff, everything we do matters. And when we're new to Ascension material and we first start trying to live in alignment to the law of one, it's not always easy. It doesn't always come naturally. If you're really lucky, you get to start with the small stuff. Because if you don't have the small stuff locked down, when the big stuff comes along, you're not going to stand any chance. So you really need to work that Christic muscle as much as you can. It doesn't mean you have to be perfect, but if you can approach everything you do with a sincere heart and a willingness to see where you can do better, then that's a really good start. Now, I've spoken a lot about keeping our own boundaries, but I also want to briefly cover respecting other people's boundaries. Obviously, boundaries go both ways. So we need to be aware of everyone's boundaries and respect the lines that they draw in the sand also. Hopefully, once you start increasing your own boundaries, this will naturally evolve to you respecting others. If you're doing your clearing work and you're spending time in self-reflection and you recognize when other people breach your boundaries, you can really turn that around on yourself and go, okay, well, they're doing this to me. Do I ever do that? And you just become a bit more aware of your actions when it comes to other people. So when you reach out to people, it doesn't hurt to assess your motivations, just to make sure that it's a necessary contact, not just one of those times when you're feeling like you want someone to notice you or to validate you or to give you attention. I've certainly had moments where I've done that, and I find it's especially easy to do with email. There's been a few times where I've written an email and I've read it and I'm like, oh, I don't know, I probably shouldn't send this, but I send it anyway and I have instant regret. And if the person I sent it to doesn't reply, I'll be like, yep, I knew it. I knew I shouldn't have sent that email. So I think it's important to take responsibility for yourself and not take it personally if you've reached out to somebody and they don't reply. Because yes, in some instances, it may be they've not replied because of your behavior. Maybe they've felt you've breached their boundaries in some way. But in a lot of cases, it probably has nothing to do with you. They might be extremely busy, they might be feeling unwell, or they just might have priorities that are more important at that time. I still remember the first time I ever heard Lisa say that she couldn't reply to somebody who asked her for help. And I was really surprised, and I remember thinking, wow, we can do that. And again, it just goes back to the programming that I had, that I thought I couldn't say no to anybody under any circumstances, especially if they were asking me for help. And if people do ask for your help, or really this can be applied to just people in general, bear in mind that most people aren't aware of their own boundaries and the need to have them. So again, it comes down to you, for you to be mindful of this in all of your interactions. That means as Christic beings, we don't want to impose our will on other people or try to control them in any way. That includes doing healings on people, scanning their energies, or shielding them without their permission. However, there are a lot of other healing modalities out there that aren't aware of these natural laws, and they do tend to encourage psychic snooping, and that it's perfectly fine to violate other people's energy fields as long as you're doing it from a place of good intention. So just be careful if you do have a bit of that rescuer vibe going on, that you don't get sucked into that mindset that you know better and you're trying to help this person for their own good, because what you'll end up doing is just violating their rights, and that doesn't help anyone. Anyway, I hope hearing about some real life experiences was helpful. I know how hard it is to identify this kind of stuff in the 3D world. It's one thing to read about it, but it's certainly another to apply it to your life. I'd just like to finish up with something that can be found on the Foundation site. There is a section there for healthy boundaries with quite a few different articles on the topic. One that I thought would be good to include is in the article titled Dealing with Aggressors. It outlines our human rights, which are the same in God's natural laws. You have the right to take care and protect yourself from being threatened physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. You have the right to set your own priorities and choose the manner you express to live on earth, as long as it does not intentionally harm others. You have the right to express feelings, opinions, and desires. You have the right to be treated respectfully. You have the right to create your own happy, healthy life based in spiritual purpose. You have the right to be God's sovereign and free and be given the power to be in charge of directing your energies and life. And you have the right to choose intent, consent, and authority with the kind of forces you choose. I think that says it all, and I pray that we all get to remember these laws and to live by them, as God would have it be. Thank you so much.